If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, the number one is the experience, and they've been around and doing it for a while. They got a track record. They can walk us through 2 to 3 full cycle deals. They've been through the highs of the highs and the lows of the lows. And just, you know, the desire that they see what value we could add to their company, as well as, you know, them being a good fit for us. I usually like to get that done early in the process, just because, again, I don't want to waste their time. They don't want to waste mine. So that's very important, is that you have that connection based on the attraction of what they're doing and that they're able to understand your model.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
John is the COO, founder, and managing partner of JID Investments. In 2008, he received his Master of Science from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and he has served honorably as a naval aviator for 20 years. John's primary responsibilities include executing daily operations and securing of capital for project funding with over $28 million in company, or with over $28 million for the company. Golly, John, I can't even read your intro right, man. We're just going to leave that there and let it roll and let people know that, hey, this is real life. Hey, I love interviewing guys that share the same haircut.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Sam. It's great to be on the show. I mean, you look a lot better than me. You got a clean cut, but we're both looking sharp here, so that's a good thing.
Absolutely, man. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, so I mentioned my service in the Navy, 20 years, had a blast, kind of my first dream job. Now I'm in my second dream job. I started kind of halfway point when I was in the Navy, about 10-year point back in 2005, 2006 timeframe. I got in actively, actually. I started getting involved with some new construction home builders, and I found a pretty neat niche. We were stationed in a pretty growing area of the country there in southern Maryland. And I was stationed there, so I was close to home. So I was in the same market as where I wanted to kind of grow my real estate experience. And I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And I had a couple of mentors that were involved with me that were doing it as well. So I kind of had them to learn from. I had some really good builders. I was close to where I was doing the work and where I was going to be kind of investing. So that was kind of my, I guess, start. And after I did 2 or 3 of those, I made some nice money. And the Navy took me overseas for 3 years. I worked in the Naval Forces Europe Command. And I decided to invest passively. And I invested with some of those same guys that I was working with when I was actively pursuing new construction. So for about 7 years, I was making 10% a year over a 7-year period each year. And I was getting offering memorandums and pro formas and looking at demographics and learning the different aspects of it, more from the outside looking in, but still understanding what the developers and the sponsors do. So I did that for 7 years, came back from overseas, did a tour in Texas as an instructor pilot. And then I came back to DC, and this is where I planted my roots since 2011. About 2012 timeframe, I knew I was coming up on my retirement from the Navy around 2017. And I kind of was scratching my head saying, what do I want to do when I grow up? So I kind of felt like I thought my passion for people and for what I was doing, kind of similar to the passive side for the 7 years, I said, why don't I start a business doing this? And that's kind of the road I went down. I partnered up with my accountant at the time, who's now our chief financial officer. And he and I put together a plan for the business. We launched in 2013. We did some smaller residential renovation projects with a few people that came on board with us to become investors through the business. And you fast forward to 2021 now, we got, you know, 10, 11 projects that are executing. We got an opportunity zone investment. We're doing a large scale development, new construction. We got about 180 investors in the company that are investing passively with us through private placements and, you know, form 506 and C's and B's. And we're offering our services, which is private money and general equity, to our sponsor partners.
Wow, that is really cool. Congrats to you for, for scaling the way you have. I mean, you guys have done a lot of cool things. I want to rewind, I guess, on your first deal or your first kind of investing. Yep. What was your relationship with those builders?
You know, I started looking at a variety and kind of a multitude of different ways to invest actively. You know, I thought about the renovation, fix and flip model. I thought about going after probates, going after foreclosures, you know, so I was kind of like running a lot faster than I kind of thought. So I learned quite a bit, but I think that the niche with new construction home building, it was just an asset class that opened the doors to the potential opportunity from where the market was at the time. It was a growing area, Southern Maryland. It was kind of old school, you know, like you had an older community, but we had just had a huge naval presence move from Washington, D.C. into Southern Maryland. So now that brought contractors, families, and that just, you know, as you know, when populations increase and you have new jobs, you know, people flood to those areas, and then your transportation, your restaurant industries, your hospitality, everything explodes. So they needed homes and there was a ton of land there. So I kind of put my thinking cap on with some of those guys that I'm good friends with still and I work with. And that's kind of where we went. We went down that path and we got involved with some really established, well-known local area home builders that kind of like, you know, a little bit smaller than the Pulte's and the Ryan Homes of the world, but still kind of made their niche and had a good kind of understanding of that market. And that's who we partnered with. And they did all the work. They managed everything. We kind of came in as a primary resident home builder, but with the mindset that we were going to sell those properties once they were finished. And again, being close to there, you know, walking the property every day, I live pretty much right around the corner. It made it a lot easier for me.
Yeah. So you guys were contracting with the home builders. You guys were actually owning the home, having them build it, and then you guys were selling it.
Yeah, that's correct. If you and your listeners know, you know, you have a construction to permanent loan. So the builder kind of took on a lot of the cost up front. And then once we got to a point where we're going to close, I would assume, you know, the construction loan plus the permanent loan. But, you know, 2 weeks before I'm going to closing, I'm marketing the property for purchase to other buyers. So I'll give you an example. The first one, we were all in net about $280,000 and I sold it for $380,000.
Wow.
So I walked away with a $65,000, $70,000 net check. And I said, you know, hey, I like this. I want to keep doing this. And I got the book.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you guys somehow or another weathered the 08 storm and kept didn't lose your shirt.
No. So, I mean, I did a lot of the active side, Sam, about 2 years before 08 hit. And then when I was passively investing, one of the groups that I was working with hit it hard and well during the 08 crash because all the big boys were kind of folding.
Right.
And that allowed an opportunity for, you know, these smaller groups to go out and really get property, you know, acquire property 20, 30, 40 cents on the dollar, and then turning around and selling it for 80 or 90 cents on the dollar and just, you know, raking it in. And we actually, some of my greatest returns and growth was during the recession just because we hit it at that pocket.
Wow. That's fantastic. Good for you. You had both, I think, you know, a well-executed plan, but also just good timing.
I mean, yes, exactly. That's important.
It is. And one of those you can control and one of those you cannot. So
that's right.
That's great, man. So what's it been like scaling your company to where it is now? Like, what are some hiccups you guys have run into? What are some things you've done right?
You know, when you do it part-time, it's obviously a challenge because you got your primary employment and that was the Navy. And, you know, the Navy had my life number one. And then after that was really just finding the time to spend growing the business, scaling the business part-time. So that was kind of a challenge, but I persevered and it actually gave me the courage and the kind of fortitude to persevere forward to say, hey, I could do this. If I could do it part-time and we're having this success, I mean, I'm just putting, you know, as much effort as I can, but let's just call it 50%. Imagine if I could put 100 or 110% into this full time. So that was kind of the first kind of look at it to make sure that I could go out and do it full time. You know, just the knowledge and learning and just the absorption of just doing it and growing and understanding different aspects of it. You know, we are passive. You're passive as well on some of the things you're doing, but you still have to have an understanding of everything, right? And you're still accountable to your investors and the folks that you represent on everything.
Right.
So even though you may not have direct responsibility for management, operations, construction, acquisition, development, you're still the guy when the investors go to and say, hey, what's going on with the project? Why are we behind schedule? Where are my returns at? So those and how to be able to still understand all aspects of it. And that's a learning process. Just putting the right people around me as I scale. You know, my business partner, who's my CFO, he handles the accounting, he handles the monies and the finances, which is great, but I still have to understand that as well if I'm going to talk smartly about it to our investors. You know, the legal side was definitely a learning experience. We started that back in 2014. We started bringing on a PPM attorney who does all the private placement, learning the blue skies, learning the filings, learning the difference between a C and a B and what I can do a B and what I can do a C, and being able to walk through that with my investors, understanding the risk. That was a challenge. Going out and just finding new business, finding new sponsors to work with. You know, I wish it was easy where you could just go on an internet website and you get all these sponsors you can work with that need your money. And then you find another site that's got thousands and thousands of accredited investors that are just waiting to meet you. Yeah, it's not that easy. You got to beat the street. You got to pound the sand and you got to get out there and you got to be active. And it was a challenge this past year with COVID, you know, doing it virtually and trying your best to meet folks and show them your business, as well as have that kind of camaraderie and that across the table connection with both the people that you're trying to help with funding and then those people that you're trying to help that want to be part of the investment side. Most of our investors are business owners, professionals. You know, they don't have the time to sit down and go through all the details of a project. That's my job. Right. What I want to be able to do is have a great project from a fantastic experienced developer that I started a great relationship with, that we're in partnership with now. And now I'm bringing those folks to the table to look at their deals so that they could potentially participate passively. So go to their, you know, 7 to 7 job, come home, and on the weekends in their pajamas drinking their coffee can go through their portfolio of what they have with us that they're investing in.
Right. So you guys partner with other active operators.
That's correct. We're kind of a syndicator, if you will, or a passive investment vehicle. We're typically coming in as a limited partner as part of a joint venture operation on the limited liability company that the developers typically are sponsors, typically the GP, as you know. And we come in fully sanctioned under a 506C or B, you know, exempt security or non-exemption. And we invest as that party, whether we're coming in for development equity or we're coming in for new construction equity or multifamily value add equity. It just depends on the sponsor, the asset class that they're focused on.
Right. What have been some key hallmarks that you look for when you're developing a relationship with new sponsors?
You know, the number one is the experience, and they've been around and doing it for a while. They got a track record. They can walk us through 2 to 3 full cycle deals. They've been through the highs of the highs and the lows of the lows. And just, you know, the desire that they see what value we could add to their company, as well as, you know, them being a good fit for us. I usually like to get that done early in the process, just because, again, I don't want to waste their time. They don't want to waste mine. So that's very important, is that you have that connection based on the attraction of what they're doing and that they're able to understand your model. So we walk through that. We get that done. The worst thing in the world you could do is look at a deal and then you're at the 11th hour and they come back and say, oh, we have mandatory required capital calls. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. We don't do those. Or, hey, you got to sign on the recourse. No, we don't do that. So we get all that out up front. And then, you know, it's just a good connection. We ask for information. We get it in within 24 to 48 hours. There's no red flags. We do our research on them, making sure everything makes sense. And then once we kind of feel that there's a good connection there and that they're a good fit for us, we'll start looking at their deals. We'll start digging into their projects and be in a position to bring their deals to then our passive pool of investors that are available. So the experience of the developers, number one. The number two, which is right next to that, is obviously the location and the market. Mm. We love Washington, D.C. It's my backyard, Northern Virginia, Maryland. But we also like the Carolinas. We like Georgia. We like Florida. We like Tennessee. We love that Southeast market. I don't like going up further north because you know what's going on in New York right now, in Massachusetts and New York. Not that they're bad areas to live. It's just they're very burdened with taxes and cost of living is very high. And what's happening to the population in those areas? Everybody's leaving, right? I mean, my mother and father live in Brooklyn, New York. I'm moving them down to Fairfax, Virginia in August. They've lived there for 46 years, Sam. You know, they're scared, but at the same time, they understand that I'm trying to bring them to a better place for them, be closer to me and my family. But at the same time, it's just very difficult living in those markets right now. So that's the second thing. The third thing is the asset class and the risk, the returns. That's kind of your potpourri, right? That's when you're looking at everything and trying to think to yourself, okay, good sponsor. They like us. We like them. Great market. Now let's start looking at the other things that are going to, you know, be a potential factor.
Right. And I bet at this point you guys are having more sponsors approach you than you guys really have an interest in investing with.
That is very perfectly stated. And to the point where they are, they're sponsors that we're meeting through warm handoffs, which is great. You know, I'm not going out and I'm not, you know, going in the yellow pages or on the internet. Sometimes I do just because I like to reach out. I read a lot of stuff about the local markets and I see there's some developers that are doing great stuff. But most of the folks we work with, if not all, they've been warm handoffs, people we have a great relationship with. And like you said, we have more projects than we can fund right now.
Right. And that's interesting. What are some asset classes you guys are not investing in right now?
Hospitality, just because we know what's going on there. We just got out of a multifamily hold value add. And for the way we're positioned, those are difficult because we're not a direct source. You know, we're not directly sourcing the monies. They're coming through us as the vehicle, and then they're coming into the investment. So it's difficult sometimes with those returns to be able to make money for both the investors, which is always number one, and we want to make sure they get their returns, but also to make profits for the company. So those are a little difficult. I would say that most of the other type of asset classes we still look at, we love development and new construction. We're good at those. Depending on the location, maybe it's a new construction home or a subdivision, but most of the stuff we're doing is mixed use commercial and residential, condo, apartment, either for hold or sale. Or refi to come out. We love senior living. We love storage. And we like residential renovation. I mean, I'd love to come in for 100 to 200 grand for, let's call it an equity loan, and get a little collateral on that and let it ride because my returns will be coming back to me in 6 to 12 months. So, but yeah, to answer your question, I'd say the one we're probably staying away from the most is the hospitality and just watching what's going on. And really, we'd like to be kind of diverse in what we look at in our asset classes. I'd rather say that I don't want to do an asset class because there's a sponsor that I met that doesn't do the asset class. Right. If they're really good at what they do, we'll love to look at what they're doing.
Sure. So is what you guys are doing more of a fund to funds model?
Yes.
Then were you guys coming on the LP side?
We're coming in on a deal by deal basis. We found that right now where we're at, it works. Our investors know exactly where their money's going in. They know everything about that specific opportunity. And there's no questions of, oh, well, you're taking 10% of this and 20% of that, and you're spreading it out. You know, eventually we may get there, but right now we like that model.
Right. And so why do investors come to you and invest with you versus just going directly to the sponsor?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that the biggest or the number one answer is that the sponsor is going to need a lot more money typically than what one or two or 10 of our investors will write a check for. You know, they're typically coming to us for $500,000 to $5 million. So most of our investors are invested at about a $25,000 to $50,000 level. So that would probably be the biggest, is that our investors can participate at that lower level of entry, so low barrier of entry, and not be part of that larger scale that they would need to be if they went directly to the developer. The second is that we do all the homework. We do all the research. We do all the analysis. We meet the sponsor. We build those relationships. We look at those deals. We go to those markets. We spend, that's our job. So my goal is, if you're an investor in my company and you signed up, I want to be able to show you a deal that I try to put on a silver platter. Now, are you going to go through it and beat the heck out of me on it? Absolutely. I expect you to. And I expect you to beat me up on it. But at the same time, if I do my job and I do what, you know, you're looking for as far as being a passive investor, then you have the opportunity to see some really neat projects and have the opportunity, not be required, obligated to come in. Because when our investors sign up with us, we have them come on board and then they basically just have to verify they're accredited, let us know if that changes, and then they just agree to our non-disclosure agreement. And then they get to see all the deals we've done. They can see the deals we're doing, and the ones that are upcoming, obviously, they'll be on our list to see.
Right. I'm curious on the NDA side of things. Well, how does that work and why do you put an NDA in there?
Well, we put it in there just because, you know, we have information we get from our sponsors that could be confidential and sensitive. So if I have someone that's interested legally from my side, I've signed NDAs. I've agreed to not sharing that sensitive information that comes from the developer, the performers, the OMs. So we just want to bring folks on board for a few reasons. One, we want them to get comfortable with our process and know who we are, and then understand that, you know, hey, this information we're sharing with you is for your eyes only. Again, we're showing them our stuff too, our private placement memorandums, our documents that we don't share with the general public.
Right. No, that's super great. Have you guys ever measured the time from when you guys have first contact with an investor up until when they finally make an investment with you guys?
Yeah, I would say typically when we bring on a new investor, there's a little bit of a period there where we want them to get comfortable looking at the specifics. And then once they feel comfortable, and usually that's during the onboarding process too. I mean, we want to walk through them on the big picture. And then when they become investors with us, we'll show them some previous projects. If they're local, we could drive them out to the site. We'll walk, we'll put a hard hat on them and a vest. I love doing that. But typically I would say that, you know, at least over 50 to 60% of the investors that sign up are investing, if not more, on the first project they see. And again, they like that lower barrier of entry that they could come in for 25 to 50,000, get their toe wet, see how they're doing, and then have the confidence to say, wow, this is going great. You know, I see the project, I have the numbers, I can ask John questions anytime. And then, you know, I can get ready to do my next one if I'm interested.
Right. No, that's super cool. John, this has been fascinating. I've really enjoyed our interview here. It's fun to see people doing cool projects and really knowing their markets well. I like,
thanks, Sam.
You know, you've got your specific market and this is where we focus, and you know, you seem to have a really dialed in process. So
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was fun. And we're on the web. If anybody wants to see us, I think you have my contact information. So feel free to share it. And if anybody has questions in general, any of your listeners, I'm always available, whether it's they got a question about starting out or they're looking at something, feel free to reach out to me anytime.
That's awesome, John. Let's jump here into the final four. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Mentors, get yourself mentors, get people that are where you want to be and learn from them. Ask them if you can go buy them coffee, go ask them if you can come on the job site with them, ask them to just, you know, teach you as much as they can if they're willing. And I can guarantee you that the majority of those people are willing to help others.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
Grow my knowledge base. Try not to be the expert about everything, but at least know about stuff that, you know, that's out there. Taxes, depreciation, cost segregation, whatever it is. I may not be the expert, but I need to know about it and learn about it.
Right. Absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
My faith. Absolutely. Just, you know, the golden rule. You know, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love others as you love yourself.
Right.
That's my goal. That's my goal in life, my man.
Well, I hope you can live up to it. That's a high bar.
I know. It is. It is. The Lord set it high.
That's a high bar. John, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. Come reach out to me anytime on our website. You come check us out at J as in Juliet, I as in India, D as in Delta, investments, all one word.com. I'm on LinkedIn at John Rubino. We have a YouTube channel. So come out and visit us anytime. Love to talk to folks. And you have my email address. If you want to shoot that out, folks are more than welcome to contact me at their convenience.
That'll be there in the show notes as well. John, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. It was great and a pleasure, and you have a great day.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.